Our next case is 11-673, Board of Education of the City School District of the City of Cincinnati versus Roger T. Connors and Deborah Connors. Mr. Phillips?
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Ohio Revised Code 33-1317 grants boards of education of a public school district the discretion and perhaps even the obligation to enter into contracts for the benefit of the school district. To the extent that the General Assembly has established a public policy regarding community schools, that public policy is clearly stated in the explicit statutory language, and where the General Assembly, as it has in this case, has established an explicit statutory framework, the judiciary should not expand on that public policy by imposing extra statutory obligations. With respect to community schools, Ohio Revised Code 3314.41 grants charter school operators a limited right of first refusal in certain circumstances for the appraised value prior to the public auction of a excess school. However, that statute does not provide charter schools any rights after the auction. There certainly is no prohibition of deed restrictions in that statute. The decision of the court of...
I just want to make sure I understand the posture of this case. The Cincinnati School District needed to sell this property. It sold this property, and the only deed restriction was it could go for any purpose except another school.
Your Honor, the deed restriction said that it had to be utilized for commercial purposes and could not be used.
So you could build a bar, you could build a go-go bar, you could build a dance hall, you could build anything, but you couldn't build a school.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
And their basis is that there is no state public policy or there's no legislative public policy favoring charter schools.
No, Your Honor. I believe that CPS's position in this case is there is a public policy as it relates to charter schools. However, that public policy is very narrow.
And it does not trump what you consider your right to put those deed restrictions in, prohibiting a charter school from building on property you once owned.
Yes, Your Honor, or any school. It could have been a parochial school or a school from another school district. It wasn't limited just to charter schools.
And is that because Cincinnati schools don't want the competition?
Well, Your Honor, I think there's a couple issues here. Cincinnati Public Schools, as they looked at the schools that were put up for auction, there were nine of them. The one at issue in this case was one of nine. And the schools that were put up for auction, this one in particular, were extremely old, over 100 years old. This particular building had not been used for a school for many, many years, 10 years, I believe. It was in poor condition. There was probably asbestos. There were live open wires. And CPS, as it looked at it, who frankly is in the business of education, determined that it was in the best interest of the board or the school district as well as the community not for this building to continue to be used for schools. It believed that this type of building was not going to provide the best opportunity for children.
But if somebody else wanted to come along, buy it, and spend all the money to remove the asbestos and repair it and rehab it and educate children in it, you didn't want to allow that.
Yes, Your Honor, because, again, CPS has the statutory authority to make those decisions, and it exercised its discretion in a way that made the most sense to it. I mean, the bottom line is CPS did not want to put a school that, when you looked at every single objective criteria that is looked at with respect to whether or not a school is adequate for education, failed it and failed it miserably. So in exercising its discretion...
But isn't that a cost analysis for the school district to make? It's not worth us putting umpteen million dollars into this building, so we're going to cut our losses and we're going to put it on the auction block. That's the analysis that the school undertakes or the district undertakes when determining what buildings to jettison. Is that true?
At a certain level, I suppose. What really happens is that the Ohio School Facilities Commission, that's very involved in funding of schools, has a very rigorous process that you have to go through in making the determination as to whether or not a school should be renovated or whether or not it should be, in essence, sold at auction. And in this case, the analysis that was done not only by looking at the OSFC criteria but also other criteria that the school district utilizes in making these decisions determined that this school was not appropriate and shouldn't be utilized.
But they didn't take into consideration somebody willing to rehab the school and bring it up to the standards that would, you know, allow for its habitation as a school, correct?
They did not look at that because to the extent that there's a statutory requirement to give charter school operators an opportunity to this right of first refusal, the statute says whether or not this, before it goes to auction, the school board has to make a determination then as to whether or not it is appropriate or can be utilized for classroom space. So in exercising their discretion, they looked at it, looked at objective criteria, and made that determination that this school was not appropriate and should go to auction. And, of course, the statute doesn't say anything as to or provide anything beyond, you know, what it states. And what has happened here is...
I'm a little confused here. Was this building originally offered to charter schools with a right of first refusal?
No, Your Honor, it was not.
Because?
Because the school board, pursuant to the statute, which is 33-14-41, has to make a determination as to whether or not it's suitable for classroom space. In exercising its discretion, utilizing the criteria that we've just discussed, it made the determination that it was not suitable for classroom space and therefore should go to auction.
So you made the decision that it should not be offered to charter schools, and then you made the decision that even if somebody were to buy it and fix it up on their own, they could not operate it as a school.
That's correct, Your Honor, except that we didn't make it after. We made it before. It was
right.
Very clear.
It's a deed restriction.
It was very clear, and Dr. Connors testified in another case, not this case, but testified that he was well aware that there was deed restriction. It was in all the...
If somebody wanted to buy it and rehab it as a bar, that was fine with the school board.
Yes, Your Honor, because the statute allows public schools to make that determination.
Counsel, what's the legal concept, the legal analysis that's involved in determining the viability of deed restrictions? Is it a contract analysis?
Your Honor, the case law, in essence, says that unless there is a very clear statutory provision, or unless there's a well-established set of case law that, in essence, very clearly states what it is, deed restrictions that are unambiguous should be enforced. And there's no argument in this case that the deed restriction was anything other than clear and unambiguous.
Right. And the school district, Cincinnati Public School District, is it an entity of the state or is it a local government entity?
It's a local government with in essence, a school board elected by the citizens of Cincinnati.
So any deed from the school district and any sale of property can be done without an individual act or approval of the General Assembly as is required for state-owned lands.
Yes, Your Honor.
The title, for title purposes, is considered to be the ownership of the Cincinnati Public School, not the state of Ohio.
Yes, Your Honor. Correct.
Right. And does your argument then come down to we complied with the provisions of the law that authorize us to sell excess lands or property we we don't need, and one requirement on that is to offer school buildings to others in the education business if they seem to be appropriate. Is that what exactly is the constraint on your putting these school buildings up for auction? How would you describe it?
Our position, Your Honor, is that based on the well-established issues as to when a deed restriction can be voided as against public policy, unless there's a clear, explicit, and well-defined public policy that's enunciated in the statute itself, it is not up to courts to basically step in and make determinations as to what the public policy is. That's a job for the legislature.
So it's not a matter of timing. You're not arguing that, look, charter schools or anybody else interested in buying this for school purposes needed to litigate this before it was sold with this restriction. You're not objecting to that, or are you? I sort of got the impression initially that you were saying part of the problem is they're too late. We went through the process unchallenged, put the deed restriction on, offered it at a public auction, well known to anybody who came to the auction that the restriction was in place, after we had complied with what we view as the statutorily required process. So if you don't step in ahead of time to say, wait a minute,
There's two parts to this case. You know, part one is whether or not, which was filed as a declaratory judgment action by CPS when it became evident that Dr. Connors, despite knowing about the deed restriction, was intending to violate it and open a charter school. When that information came to CPS's attention, it filed a declaratory judgment action and requested a stay. Stay was denied. Ultimately, judgment was entered on the pleadings without any discovery. That's the case that's before the court today. There's another case that was filed by Dr. Connors in which he's challenging basically the process as to whether or not we properly went through this, you know, offer of first refusal.
Well, was there an offer under 331341 to offer the property for sale to the governing authorities of any startup community schools established under Chapter 3314?
No, Your Honor, because, again, CPS, in using its discretion per the statute, made a determination that this building was not suitable for classroom space.
Counsel, what was the valuation that was put on this property before it went up for auction?
It was appraised at $250,000, and Dr. Connors purchased it for $30,000 at auction.
I don't know that anybody's raised this argument, but it sort of leaped into my mind that this deed restriction apparently reduced the value of this property a significant amount.
No, Your Honor.
Why would that not offend the provision when you sell it for auction? Whatever public entity is sells it for the highest value obtainable.
Appellees have raised that argument, Your Honor, and there's absolutely no factual base for that argument in the record. The fact of the matter is that
the appraiser wasn't very good then, or what?
Your Honor, we've just experienced one of the worst real property markets in the history in the last 50 years in this country. So,
and the appraiser didn't take that into consideration?
I'm not sure how that happened. Again, the record doesn't really speak to that. They've made the assumption that that's the basis, but...
Well, counsel, there was only one bid, wasn't there?
Yes, Dr. Connors.
Well, isn't the true test of what the value of the property is what the market will bear? And in this case, it only looked to $30,000. That was the only bid on this property.
That's correct,
and
Your
it was
Honor.
Properly advertised?
Yes, Your Honor.
And there's no question that the public or anybody who would have been interested in a school building for whatever use had the opportunity to bid?
Yes, Your Honor, that's all correct. What I'm saying is there's no evidence in the record that supports the linkage of the deed restriction being what's driving the price down.
Counsel, can I ask you one question before your time expires? Removing the charter school rubric on this argument, the legislature has now amended the statute to remove that it be suitable. So we're not going to have this going forward. The school district will now be required to offer it to community schools, and there'll be no determination about suitability. So removing for a minute whether it's a public school or a community school, aren't we really here on the enforceability of a contract? And would you give me your best argument on whether this deed restriction in fact violates public policy?
Your Honor, that's absolutely right. What happened in this case was basically the court looked at what I think is a very thin argument with respect to a public policy that nowhere says that there's some sort of Uber right that charter schools have to acquire buildings no matter what the circumstances. And in this case, we have a owner at the time, Dr. Connors, who was not even within the class of people that could have been considered because at the time he wasn't a charter school operator. So if we had given this right of first refusal, it would not have gone to Dr. Connors and he could not have participated in it. So we have basically the court substituting its determination as to what the public policy of Ohio should be with respect to deed restrictions as it relates to charter schools.
But counsel, isn't it a matter of the board prohibiting the acquisition? I mean, when you stated your proposition just now, you were saying there's no right that the charters are insured these buildings. The deed restriction takes it one step further and says we are going to prevent any acquisition by the charters for this building.
For any school, Your Honor, including parochial schools or another district. And what I'm saying is if the legislature wants to include in the legislation, and Justice McGee Brown is absolutely correct, the legislature has recently amended the statute, as it has numerous times throughout the short duration of charter schools being in operation. It is an experiment. The court, in its own decision in State ex-rel Ohio Congress of Parents and Teachers, indicated this is an experiment. And for a trial court in the First District to look at this and say, okay, there is such a clear, well-established public policy, it should trump deed restrictions that were made knowingly with people.
Is this the only deed, the only transfer of property that had this deed restriction in it?
No, Your Honor. There were 9 properties auctioned. 3 did not sell. 6 sold. All 6 of them had the same exact
same
deed
thing.
Restriction in it, which is why this case is important to be determined, because not only for CPS as it relates to this auction, but also any other public school that's offered this in the future.
The change in the statute doesn't really affect the issue in this case or those who might arise in the future, does it? The question in this case is whether or not the school board has the authority to insert a deed restriction that property itself cannot be used, I guess probably not just for school purposes, but insert a restriction for any purpose.
Right, Your Honor. I mean, for example, that's exactly right. This court in the Anderson Maltby partnership case, which is a 2010 case, looked at the issue of whether or not charter schools had some sort of right to be able to, in essence, get a tax exemption when there was a lease that was being utilized for profit. And what the court said there was, even though this, in essence, operates as a detriment to charter schools, it is not the court's role to basically determine what the public policy in Ohio is or what legislation should be. And that's exactly what we have here. If the legislature is concerned about this, if the legislature believes that there should be some sort of right that charter school operators ought to be able to obtain old schools, no matter what the circumstances, no matter if we've gone through the entire process. I mean, this Court of Appeals decision is so broad that had it turned out that we were correct, that we didn't have to offer it up because it wasn't suitable, we go ahead and sell it at auction with a deed restriction, a developer buys it, then flips it to a charter school operator. This Court of Appeals decision is so broad that it would say, even though we complied completely with the statute, we're prohibited from utilizing a deed restriction. And the tiny hook that this one-ton argument hangs on is not strong enough under the single statute to support that.
Counsel, is it a benefit to have this building rehabilitated and utilized no matter what the purpose?
I suppose that...
to the community.
People could argue that. My personal opinion is having a substandard school out there that, you know, was purchased for $30,000, that in essence some elbow grease was utilized to put in paint and other type of things to, you know, bring this to a condition that...
So it's up to code? Is there any argument that it's not up to code?
There is no argument that it's up to code. However, whether or not it's up to code doesn't mean that it's suitable to be utilized by in the education of children. And the more important thing is, if CPS is looking at this as someone who's professionally involved in the, and for the last 100-plus years has been involved in educating children, they ought to get the discretion, not the courts.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson.
Good morning, Your Honors. Maurice Thompson, 1851 Center for Dr. Connors, and I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for AMICI, Ohio Alliance for Public Charter Schools, Black Educational Alliance, and School Choice Ohio. Your Honors, nothing that you just heard here changes the fact that this case is about Cincinnati Public Schools placing the defense of its state funding above Ohio policy and the best interest of Cincinnati children and taxpayers. And this court should affirm the trial court and appellate court's findings that this deed restriction violates Ohio's public policy in favor of conveying older, unused, dormant public school buildings to other public schools, and community schools are public schools, so that those buildings can be used to bring school choice to the children of Cincinnati in these failing areas.
Counsel, you've got strong public policy arguments. I don't think there's any question that the present iteration of the General Assembly falls all over itself to support charter schools and alternatives to public schools. But there is an underlying legal fundamental question to me, and that is, this is a deed restriction. I think we look at deed restrictions the same way we analyze contracts, pretty much. And I'm not quite understanding where the General Assembly gets the authority to affect the ownership of property that the state doesn't own.
Great question, Your Honor. And you're correct. This is a contracts case. A deed is a contract, so this is governed by contract, common law contract principles. And, of course, the exception, the public policy exception, is part of those common law principles. The legislature, first of all, the power to contract for CPS comes from the legislature. CPS is a creature of the state, created by the state to promote public education. So there is no individual natural freedom to contract the way that an individual or a private party would have here. So they have a statutory power to contract to begin with that's constrained in many ways. Here, they're actually forced to engage in a public auction, forced to contract against their will if they thwarted the actual statute. The legislature has the authority, with CPS in particular, because there's an agreement that CPS will follow the terms of the legislation when it receives money for facilities from the legislature. In other words, in order to solve this court's Durolf concerns, the School's Facilities Commission was created, funds these new school buildings. And what the legislature simply asks is, look, if we're going to spend a bunch of state taxpayer money on these new school buildings for you, Cincinnati Public Schools, all that we ask is that you help facilitate the state's program of education, community schools, by using your old buildings, allowing them to be used as community schools. And
well,
CPS wouldn't even allow for that here.
This is off the subject, but I don't think all that they ask is that when they're confronting local school districts with a bushel of money for new schools. They've got a
sure
laundry list of things that they expect. But going back to my original question, it is your view that whether it's a city or a township or county that holds title to real estate, that's different than private ownership where the state legislature is concerned, that they can affect the ownership rights of a local subdivision of government in any way that they choose do because they've authorized the form of local government.
Your Honor, I don't think we need to go that far here, but I think that it is true that it's important to recognize that CPS has this constitutional purpose of promoting education, promoting a thorough and efficient education, not stemming the tide of educational options for the children of Cincinnati.
Yeah, you're getting us over in the public policy. I'm trying to drill down to the basic legal issue of what are the ownership rights and the property rights of a local political subdivision, be it school district or township or city or any other format of local governance that can hold title to real estate.
Your Honor,
is that always subject their ownership once they acquire an ownership in fee simple, which I assume they have here? Is there always a cloud hanging over that, being the ability to alter the bundle of sticks that we refer to in the real estate business?
You know, the contract law.
To alter that over at the State House.
The contract law speaks specifically to this issue, the public policy law, and it ties the two together. So it ties your concern with the court's analysis in this case. And that is that the Supreme Court has said the public's interest in confining the scope of private agreements to which it is not a party will go unrepresented unless the judiciary takes account of those interests. Now, the public's interest is greater when public education is involved.
What case is that?
That's the United Paperworks case that we cite in our brief, Your Honor.
Okay.
And so the notion here is when there are tremendous externalities to the contract that it's more appropriate for this court to consider with greater vitality the void by public policy doctrine. And that's certainly the case here. We're talking about a public subdivision contracting with fiduciary duty to not just the taxpayers but to the children of Cincinnati.
Counsel, the thing that disturbs me here is contained in the First District's opinion. The Connors Declaration was false at the time they wrote and signed it. And if this is a contract case, which I think we all agree it is, and you're saying public policy trumps this provision in the contract, yet the provision in the contract was known to the Connors when they bid. They were questioned, presumably, by the school district to make sure that they understood what the terms of the contract were. And they, when asked, you know, what they intended to use the property, they stated, not sure, and possible resale to another interest buyer. The Connors Declaration was false at the time they wrote it and signed it. They intended all along to lease or sell the property to a charter school and took immediate steps after the purchase to make that a reality. How do you get over the fact that your clients fraudulently entered into a contract?
Your Honor, there are several ways to address that. First is the strict legal fact that when this court considers whether to apply the public policy exception, it
applies.
Pardon
me, can you slow down a little and.
Sure. When this court considers whether to apply the public policy exception to an otherwise valid contract, it acknowledges that the contract is just that, otherwise valid. So that's what we have here is an otherwise valid contract, and then you look at whether public policy applies. The defense that you're kind of getting at is a procedural unconscionability defense, that there may have been no meeting of the minds, but that's not what this case is about. This case is about public policy. And the other thing here is that CPS has pursued this policy of deed restrictions for quite some time.
But don't you think that we have to first state that this is a binding contract, and then we're going to look at what segments of the contract should be set aside pursuant
yes,
to
Your
public
Honor.
Policy? And you don't think that the mindset of your client in entering and the representations made to the school board at the time of signing on the dotted line indicates fraudulent contracting?
No, Your Honor. And CPS hasn't argued that here. There's no argument that the conveyance is not binding on both parties. It's just whether this term is binding. And the contract contains a severability clause.
Counsel, what gives the Cincinnati Public Schools the right to exclude any kind of buyer when it puts a property up for a public auction. Could they put in a restriction that limits it to purchasers that are Ohio residents or maybe Cincinnati residents, because it would be much more beneficial to have a property owned by somebody that lives in Cincinnati as opposed to somebody that lives in Kentucky. Where is their authority to limit who can purchase the property?
Well, Your Honor, our position is not that CPS has no authority to ever use a deed restriction on a property that it sells, but simply here.
And so they can use any deed restriction except the one that you're interested in today on charter schools.
Your Honor, if you look at this deed restriction, it's really quite remarkable, and it didn't get quoted in an appellant's oral argument. Grantee covenants not to use the property for school purposes now or at any time in the future. This restriction does not apply to Cincinnati Public Schools and will not prevent Cincinnati Public Schools from repurchasing the property. So there's no neutral public welfare interest here. Cincinnati Public Schools can use the property as a school. They just don't want anybody else ever using it as a school. The reason is because the per-pupil funding follows the child when a student leaves Cincinnati
Council,
Public Schools.
That last part isn't even necessary. The grantor of any deed who puts in a deed restriction can release that deed restriction at any time. So if they acquired it back, that they wouldn't have a problem with that. I'm interested in your statement that this case has always been all about public policy. I assume, I haven't read the pleadings of what, but they filed a DEC action against your client, and I assume that DEC action wasn't about public policy. It was about we put on a deed restriction and the purchaser is violating it. So it would have been brought as a pure contract kind of action, and you have injected public policy into this. They didn't. Wouldn't that be a fair statement?
Absolutely correct, right, Your Honor. It was an affirmative defense that the contract could not be enforced. This term cannot be enforced in the contract because this term is void by a public policy because it transgresses all of these statutes that make it clear that the General Assembly is trying to convey these dormant, unused public school buildings to community school operators so they can bring more educational options to the children of Cincinnati. And that policy is really clear. When this court looks at all of those statutes, it's got to ask itself the question, what else could the legislature possibly have had in mind when it enacted all these statutes other than to facilitate the conveyance of these public schools to community school operators so that these buildings could be used as schools?
That was, they didn't offer it to community schools. This
right.
building, they didn't offer it to community schools.
That's correct, Your Honor. They didn't make the offer. They were required by law, in our opinion, to make the offer. There's a disagreement there over suitability. But to your point earlier, this is a school that is suitable. Cincinnati Public Schools says it's suitable if we use it as a school, just not if our quote-unquote competitors use it as a school.
The other six buildings that sold, or the other five buildings that sold, were they first offered to community schools?
None of the nine buildings were offered to community schools, even though some of them were used as schools within the previous year. Some of them were very recently built schools. So it's not like these buildings were all decrepit or unusable. In fact, you know, Theodore Roosevelt School is being used as a school today. 300 children have chosen to go there, their parents have, and it's got all of its permits, and it's up to all of the state requirements in the Ohio Community Schools Act for facilities, so fire inspection, health inspection, all of these things have passed. The zoning inspector, to your point, Your Honor, said that this will be a benefit to the community to have a school there. So when you look at all of the statutes that favor this conveyance to school buildings, there's no doubt that this deed restriction hinders the purpose of those conveyances. And that's really what the public policy exception is all about. If you look at the rules on public policy, a contract can't bring about a result that the law seeks to prevent. And that's exactly what we have here. We have the deed restriction preventing a result that the law is seeking to facilitate. And there's great precedent on this already, on deed restrictions, in this court's history. Back in 1915, in a case called Doan, this court flatly said that restrictive covenants in deeds cannot be construed to prevent the use of lots for public purposes. And clearly, community schools, as state-licensed public schools and education, are a public purpose. And then just this past June in Sutton versus Tomco Machining, this court made it clear that you don't want contracts that frustrate the legislative intent behind the statute. So you don't just look at the express words, but you also look at the legislative intent. And when you look at those things, Your Honor, I think that there can be no doubt that this deed restriction violates and frustrates the legislative intent and the purpose behind the statute, which is clearly to convey these otherwise unused school buildings to community schools that can bring more choices and options to the children of Cincinnati. And for that reason, this conveyance should be upheld, and the trial court, or I'm sorry, the conveyance should be upheld, but the deed restriction should be stricken, and the lower court's decisions should be affirmed so that this court does not close this school, as Cincinnati is requesting. I'd like to yield the remainder of my time to Amiki.
All 30 seconds. Mr. Riedler.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court. I'd first like to respond to your question, Chief Justice O'Connor, about the purchase here. Arguably, the only way someone could challenge this deed restriction is to first purchase the building. Otherwise, they might not have had standing to actually challenge the purchase. In fact, this happened 9 times here in Cincinnati. It's happened in other districts as well. And so the only way to be able to challenge it was to actually purchase the building and then challenge the restriction. In my remaining time, I would just like to address the important public policy that's at issue here. Justice McGee Brown asked about it, and Justice Pfeiffer talked about the current makeup of the legislature. And the fact is that facilities, acquiring appropriate facilities, are the most significant challenge facing charter schools today. It's a barrier to entry because charter schools can't acquire a facility, and it often challenges the performance of the building because they often don't have appropriate or appropriate enough facilities to use for their educational
Council, I want to ask a procedural question. I see in your brief that you argue about all the things that had been undertaken and expenditures made by the time they filed this DEC action. Was there an argument about latches in terms of they waited too long to attempt to enforce this? Was that raised at the trial court level?
That who waited too long to enforce?
That the school district waited too long, that your client had expended, says here, by the time CPS filed its complaint, Dr. Connors had invested $300,000 improvements, secured a federal grant, secured a universal service. There's a whole laundry list of things that he had done. And unless he did that in a whip stitch,
Justice Pfeiffer, I don't know for sure whether that equitable argument was raised, but certainly that equitable argument and other equitable arguments would affirmatively apply here to Cincinnati, because not only did it wait, but it also essentially did an end run around the suitability requirement to begin with, to not even make this building available to charter schools. All the equities here run in favor of the charter school. And if I could just...
Well, Council, let me ask you one question. You started out by saying that they needed to purchase this building in order to challenge the restriction. What about a taxpayer challenging it on a diminution of value?
It's possible, but the court could very well hold that the taxpayer doesn't have standing. And so the only way you concretely have standing to challenge this policy is to actually purchase the building and be affected by the deed restriction, and then assert that plain public policy trumps that deed restriction, and that is absolutely the case here. Justice Pfeiffer, I know you would appreciate this as much as anyone, because in view of the DeRolf decisions, where the court recognized that facilities are critical for educational performance, and the court recognized significant disparities in this state's public school facilities. Now, setting aside whether you agree or disagree with the constitutional reasoning in this case, the state has spent $11 billion for the School Facilities Commission to help improve school buildings for public school districts. But for public charter schools, they do not have access to school facilities money. They don't have access to local property taxes. They really don't have access in any way to purchase a new building when the school opens. And so what the state has done to try to offset that dramatic disadvantage for charter schools is to simply say that when a school district, which, by the way, here, Cincinnati has received $250 million from the state to help build new buildings.
Mr. Riedler, what about the public policy of this court upholding a contract that was fraudulently entered into by a purchaser who signed a deed restriction with no intent to comply with it? Is there not some public policy? You said all the equities are on your client's side. What about upholding the enforceability of a contract?
Well, two things, Justice McGee-Brown. First, I would say that there was no ability to challenge that contract without the purchase. So that's deemed as fraudulent or basically an ability to have legal standing to actually challenge the contract. And this has happened repeatedly in a series of sales. That was the need to actually purchase the contract. So in my view, it's not fraud. It's simply a basis to have legal standing. And second, no matter what the nature of the contract was, no matter what two parties agree to, state public policy always has to be considered. I mean, parties can't just blatantly agree to violate public policy, whether it's in the facility setting, in the racial setting, in other settings. The court always applies a public policy test to examine the contract. And here, it plainly violates what the legislature intended, which is to make these buildings, these unused buildings that are being replaced by districts with new buildings, to make those available to charter schools or to other public schools for their use to help fill that wide gap in facilities.
Did the school even challenge the contract on that basis? Is that issue even before us as a proposition of law?
I don't believe it is, Justice Stratton.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll ask you the same question. Is that issue before us as a proposition of law?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The issue of how they got the contract, how they purchased the property, the Connors.
No, Your Honor. I mean, obviously, what could have happened and what should have happened is that someone who believed that these that were within the class of persons that could challenge this, which would be a current charter school operator, which was not Dr. Connors, if someone believed that there had been a mistake made by CPS, then that issue should have been filed prior to the auction, and they should have sought an injunction or some sort of stay prior to the auction.
But you, as a party, did not assign that as assignment of error, so that's not before us.
That's correct, Your Honor. In essence, what we have here is that basically the courts have been very clear that this public policy exception should only be utilized in the most extraordinary circumstances. And here what we have is basically a statute that on its face says that not every charter school operator at any point in time has the opportunity to basically get an old school. I mean, for example, the old legislation said, put a distinction, said that if it's not suitable for classroom space, it wouldn't be offered to them. If they believe that the legislature needs to step in and basically provide a funding mechanism in order to make charter school, then they should do that. Obviously, the legislature hasn't done that. For them to, at this point in time, to basically say that this is so extraordinary, it's so well established, it's so clear, the statute that they rely on simply doesn't say that. The statute says that there's a limited offer, first refusal. Dr. Connors would not have been within the class of persons that even would have gotten the first offer. So not every charter school operator is entitled to an offer of first refusal, only those that are currently operating, not those that may operate in the future. And, you know, the type of cases in which there's been a finding that there is a public policy exception that will trump the fundamental contract rights of entities are things like when a deed restriction discriminates against a constitutionally protected class of persons, or, for example, the waiver of constitutional right to marry, contracts that...
So how about restricting the sale of the property to Cincinnati residents? Would the school board have authority to do that under the public sale statute?
Absolutely, Your Honor. There's nothing in the statutes that would prohibit that, and obviously... You know,
do not public subdivisions operate on the principle that they only have authority to do what the statutes authorize?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's exactly what CPS did in this case. The statute says that CPS has the right to sell property.
At auction, right?
Yes. And if after the auction...
And only to those persons it wishes to sell to?
No, Your Honor.
Well, it's not in the statute, is it? So what is the authority to restrict the class of persons who may purchase the property?
The statute says that anyone that wants to buy property can buy property. They can. Dr. Connors was entitled to buy the property. We're not arguing that. The problem comes into place when he starts operating in violation of a deed restriction. And CPS could have put a deed restriction in there that said we don't want restaurants to open there. We don't want – I mean – It's an odd – this whole case is so odd. It's upside down to a certain extent because you have charter school operators who generally tend to be much more on the conservative side of things, arguing that the court ought to find a public policy where none exists And you have, you know, the school board basically saying, we have the right to sell this property, and there's nothing in the statute that says we can't put a deed restriction in. I mean, for us to be at the point where we're basically having courts find public policy based on a single statutory provision, which doesn't say that CPS has to make sure that these properties are available to charter school operators at any time, is just not what the courts should be doing.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you call a recess?